Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Amber and I are joined by Sarah Hill. She's the human media strategist at Veterans United and a really big proponent of why Google Plus is the future. Also in the future, Facebook's deep face. Why does it sound like that? Cloak is an app that allows you to be less social, and a whole lot more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 154, recorded Thursday, March 20th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 280,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/social hour and receive a free Power Pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Social Hour from Twit World headquarters in Petaluma, California, where it's really starting to feel like spring. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm back in Florida again this week. I'm just outside Delray Beach, a beautiful little area in South Florida, and it's very warm and sunny here, Sarah, and it's nice to talk to you again.
Well, it's nice to talk to you, and Amber, you are looking pretty sunny and refreshed after just a week down in sunny Florida, and I have to say I'm a little jealous. It's nice weather here, but it's no Delray Beach.
Yeah, it's nice. It's good to get away and escape the cold once again. So no complaints from me at all. And hello to anyone who is watching from the Great White North. I will be back there soon enough, and I'm sure we'll have some type of spring snowstorm like we do every year. And I will remember these days fondly of being in the sun.
So, Amber, you and I have talked offline, outside of the show, a little bit about the fact that, I mean, we love each other's company, but we need more guests. We love having guests on to talk about the cool stuff that they're doing, certainly in the social space and online in general. And you found somebody for us today. Would you like to introduce her?
Yeah, I would love to. You know, in the early days of Google Plus, one of the first people I started to really follow, her name is Sarah Hill, another Sarah, and was really following how she was using Google Plus, how she was building community there. Today, she's working with Veterans United Networks and doing a lot of great work, not just with Google Plus, but also with Glass. And I'm always amazed with the amount of amazing stories she shares about using social media in a really positive way. And we are so happy that she is joining us today. And she is also wearing glass today, I think.
It's Sarah Hill, the human media strategist, which is a great title, over at Veterans United. Welcome, Sarah.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us. High five to all of you. It's great to see you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to share about some of the things we're working on and using some of this technology for good.
So, Sarah, I spent some time on your Google Plus page, and my first reaction was like, whoa, several million people have you in circles on Google Plus. You know, I thought I had a lot of friends on Google Plus, but you've really managed to make this a thriving network for yourself. Did you find that to be challenging? How does Google Plus specifically work for you?
Well, don't equate followers with engagement, right? Because we all know that there's a difference between having a large amount of followers, or can be people who have a small amount of following and have more engagement. So it's all about interacting with people and how you interact with people. I've always been geeked out about the ability to have a human media connection as far as not just text-based social media. For years, we've been chatting with individuals' avatars, right, on all of those text-based social platforms. Now, via Google Plus and Google Plus Hangouts, we have the ability to have a social media conversation, a human face-to-face conversation live via social media. So I got started as a journalist at the NBC affiliate here in town in Columbia, Missouri, at KLMU TV. And we always had that social media text-based back channel where we would chat with our viewers' avatars. But I was intrigued when I opened up a Hangout and allowed other individuals to come into that conversation and talk with us live. I think there's value in connecting with people face-to-face. Science shows that eye contact reduces hostilities online, and it possesses a unique ability to reduce the physical space between you and your customers or your viewers and place you essentially right around the corner from your key influencers, as opposed to being someplace far away where you're just chatting with a still photo, still avatar. So human media, I think, has a bright future, not only for connecting charities, for giving people a platform in which to share, but also for business. It's not just going to be e-commerce in the future. It's going to be C-commerce, where we are looking and interacting with people and understanding their body language.
So you made the move from the broadcast world to working with Veterans United. Can you talk about the work that you do with Veterans United? I mean, it's a very different type of work. And can you talk about how you're integrating different social media tools and communities into your work there?
Yeah, surprisingly, it's really similar. I was a broadcaster in my former life, and now I am a brand broadcaster. Veterans United is actually owned by a home loan company, Veterans United Home Loans, and they provide VA loans, help veterans use their VA benefit in order to purchase a home and realize that dream of home ownership. So I tell stories about veterans and military families. We travel all over the nation. We tell video stories. We also broadcast. We do broadcasts with veterans. We amplify different veterans charities via Google Plus Hangout. We hang out with veterans a lot and individuals who are interested in military proud content, and we try to develop a closer relationship with them.
Sarah, I have to ask you about the Google Glass. I know you're a proud Glass explorer, as those who are part of the initial run are called, and you're wearing them. And at least in Silicon Valley, there's a little bit of a controversy right now on the etiquette of Google Glass, what it all means. Should we all have the ability to record other people without them necessarily knowing if we're doing so? You're enthusiastic about it. What's your stance on the future of this technology and how it seems to make some people uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm. Enthusiastic about it and its ability to enhance the lives of others, okay? There are several different uses for a variety of devices, and it just doesn't have to be one use. So we at Veterans United are using this device as essentially the ability to take our veterans to a place they might not otherwise be able to see. So we do programs called Hero Tours, where we allow terminally ill and aging veterans to see their memorials in Washington, D.C., on the beaches of Normandy, France, Korea, all around the world via Hangouts and Google Plus Hangouts or Google Glass as well, most recently. So that's how we are using Glass for good. Glass has many, many different use cases. So to judge it just by one of its functions, which is recording photos and videos, might be an inaccurate description. But as far as how we're using it at the Veterans United Network, we are using it to capture video, to provide point of view perspective, to allow veterans to see through our eyes what they might not be able to experience and experience that live in real time. So, as far as how is Glass viewed here in Missouri, in Columbia, Missouri, it's really new. I would say there's probably only about a dozen Glass explorers here in Missouri. People don't fear the technology. We share it a lot. Every time we go to speak at an event or with a classroom, we allow those individuals to try it on. We allow those individuals to see what it looks like when you're recording video or photos and get to understand how it works. This essentially is the Model T of wearable computers, and it allows us to do some things that we might not otherwise have been able to do. For instance, there we are showing a live virtual tour for some real estate agents, how Glass might be able to be used to provide them home tours. And those different use cases we continually, enjoy showing, because it's not just the technology, it's the combination of the technology with the unique live streaming or Hangout ability. Hangouts on air aren't yet enabled for Google Glass, but the ability to have a private Hangout and then that stream that live on your website. Think about all of the use cases for that, with the ability to reduce the physical space between you and your following. Perhaps there's a military member in another state who wanted to see a home, but he's not able to travel there because he is serving in Afghanistan. Well, Glass and Hangouts combined together allow you to be the arms and legs of that veteran who is then able to walk through that home essentially as they were there. So there are many different use cases of Glass, and there might be some individuals out there who might not be using glass in a responsible way, as with every other device. But the device does come off. I can tell you, it's not anchored to my head. And you do have the ability to look in the whites of the eyes and still have a face-to-face conversation, just as if you would, as if you had a little prism on the top of your head.
It's amazing to me just listening to you talk about how you're using all of these different tools. I'm curious what your view is on people who aren't able to wrap their heads around the value of Google Plus as a platform or Glass. I mean, what do you think it is about Google Plus that is kind of not scaring people away, but it's limiting how many people are coming forward and using it? Or does it matter?
It does matter. And I talk about this all the time. Individuals don't understand that Google Plus is not just a social network. It's a social network, it's a crowdsourcing tool, and also it's a broadcasting platform because Google Plus is the left hand and YouTube is the right hand and they are connected. What individuals don't understand is that Google Plus is not a text-based social platform. It's a human media platform. It's not social media, it's human media, because via Hangouts, I have the ability to interact with that social following face-to-face. And every time I use or post on Google Plus, it creates, as you know, Google Juice for SEO that has the potential to increase your rankings in search. So individuals come to Google Plus and they're like, what is this? Is this the same horse of social media? Well, I'll ride it like a horse. But what people don't understand is it's not a horse, it's a centaur, right? It's half human and half horse. And the more that we start realizing with Hangouts and face-to-face communication that that is a new layer of social, that's not social media, that's human media that we're now talking about via live video streaming, people will become better able to understand that. Look at what's happening with Helpouts, right? That's human media in the middle of a crowdsourcing tool with a C-commerce layer attached to that. So that's not any other kind of regular e-commerce transaction that we've had in the past. We are able to look in the whites of the eyes, understand the body language, see individuals nodding their head. Perhaps they're using a wheelchair. Perhaps they have a child on their lap. All of the layers of miscommunication that on a former text-based social network, we never knew that they were in a wheelchair or perhaps they had a child on their lap. So it just peels away all those different layers of miscommunication. That's what interacting with people face to face does. And that's why the engagement on Google Plus is deeper, because I have someone in Italy who's been in my office physically. No, but he's there all the time via Hangouts. It reduces the physical space between us and forms deeper bonds with individuals via a human media, living, breathing social media experience.
Amber, I think we need to give Google Plus not another try because we're obviously using it, but I think Sarah really, she's really got it down. Not that there are not other social networks that connect people, but in a way, all of the tools with Google Plus really are there, perhaps more than what you could achieve with Facebook, certainly with Twitter, or any of the other photo/video-based networking tools.
It's that, and it's the crowdsourcing platform. I know when you asked us to join me via Skype, I was like, why Skype? Because if it was a Hangout, we would have the ability to invite others into that conversation. It would create Google Juice, and also it would stream live on YouTube. So it's the combination of all of those together that makes it unique. It's not just the face-to-face interaction. We've had that for a long time via Skype. But this is streaming live in a place where people are naturally going to go and seek out to consume information and content. So you put that all together, and that is a whole new layer of social that we all are just beginning to scratch the surface.
Do you think that perhaps Google Plus and Hangouts and these different tools, do you think they frighten people? I mean, is there something about anonymity that people like online clearly, and they like that it is just text-based?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's not to say that, you know, you throw your Twitter or your Facebook or any of your social media accounts out. You look at my profile, I post in all of those different areas because there is a time for text-based communication, but there's also a time for live real-time communication. Think of a journalist reporting an event. We were reporting here in Columbia, Missouri, the riots that were going on in Canada with the tuition protests there. Individuals were sharing still pictures via Twitter, but yet we, via Hangouts, were not only live streaming that event, but allowing others, individuals into that conversation to have a conversation live in real time about what they were seeing. So there's a time and a place for both things, but this unique ability to crowdsource individuals so that it's not just you broadcasting, that you have other individuals who are also able to contribute to that conversation and watch live in real time and react to what's going on. So, you know, don't throw out the other social platforms. This is just a new wrinkle that we have found to give us the ability to connect with people on a deeper level.
I feel like in some ways you're from the future when you're talking. You know, it's really interesting. Well, I really do.
Maybe you should put my Google Glass on then if I'm from the future.
No, I love it. No, it is. It's like you're taking us into the future a little bit as far as the tone and your feelings about Google Plus and Hangouts and Glass and everything, because I do think there is resistance from some people to go there, right? I think there are a lot of people who do fear using some of these new tools. Maybe they think it is too personal in some ways. I'm just curious at Veterans United, what it was like to come to them, or if they came to you to say, hey, we need this person in this type of role, because it's not something that you hear a lot about in terms of being a human media strategist. And it's definitely very innovative and very forward thinking of them.
It is. And if you research this company at all, you will see that they are very forward thinking, formed by two brothers who understand the internet and understand the ability to place a product with individuals who desperately need it. So they came to me. My beat at KOMU as the NBC affiliate was covering veterans and military families. We started Honor Flight's hubs here. My heart has always been passionate for those individuals. And so when an opportunity came up at Veterans United for a storyteller, obviously I jumped on it. And the first thing I looked at was their Google Plus platform. And I, you know, let them know that we have a unique ability to be connecting with our following and our key influencers and other people who are military proud or have the ability to share our content on a deeper level. And so we've essentially used Hangouts and Hangouts on Air as a, I don't know what you would call it, a business card or a way to interact with individuals and get to know them, so that whenever they have collaborations or projects that come on their mind, that Veterans United is top of mind, because it places them virtually around the corner from all of these other individuals who are doing other things. What mortgage company, okay, answer this, what mortgage company in the nation is interacting with people face-to-face and is wanting to have a face-to-face relationship with them? There's value in eye contact, not just in dollars, but the ability to have a meaningful impact in their life. And when you find that, when you truly want to get to know somebody on a deeper level, that they will in return not only share your content, but want to do business with you. And, you know, what Veterans United is core business is home loans, so placing veterans in homes. So veterans that might be in Afghanistan and not have the ability to be in the office of a bricks and mortar mortgage company. So it's not surprising that VU, that is, you know, in 20 states around the nation, would use human media, because essentially, who knows, one day will we need bricks and mortar? We need bricks and mortar business. If we're able to simulate virtual storefronts via video chat, will we need bricks and mortar? Who knows?
It's a great question.
Yeah, I know it's, and there are good things and bad things to think about that sort of a future. Last question for me, Sarah, is, you know, going forward, you obviously have a lot of passion for what you do, and you're good at it, and you've got measured areas of success that you can point to and say, see, this is actually working. These tools are simply tools, and it's really about the human interaction. Where do you hope that our social networking tools go towards? You know, looking a year, 5 years down the road, what do you hope to see, not just for what you're doing now, but the way that we all communicate with each other?
We need a new social media metric. Right now, we are measuring our text-based social engagement via mentions, via plus ones, or via view counts on a YouTube channel, which is a highly inaccurate way to measure social engagement on a human media platform, which is what Google Plus is. So I would like to see Google or some other smart individuals, and I've pitched this to many people till I'm blue in the face, you find a way to quantify that human interaction with an individual within a social platform, and then you will understand the value that I'm talking about. And if individuals out there haven't ever been in Hangouts before with complete strangers and then left knowing that there was a unique connection there, you'll know about that metric that I'm talking about. So, you know, companies out there, Google out there needs to come up with a human media metric, and we need to stop looking at view counts or, you know, within Google Plus, we need to add that layer of human engagement into it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been great, and you've kind of reinvigorated my passion for Google Plus and these other tools out there as well. So keep doing what you're doing, and I'm sure Sarah Lane and I will keep following and learn from you as well. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here, Sarah. It's been awesome. Seriously. What a great conversation.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to let people know that if anyone knows of a terminally ill or aging veteran who has yet to see their memorial, if you would go to vu.com/hero tour, we would love to provide them with a virtual tour.
Amazing. Yes, do and tell somebody, even if that's not you, who might be able to benefit from this. Thanks again so much, Sarah, for being here today.
My pleasure, girls. I love your work, and I was honored to be a part of your program.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks so much.
Amber.
We'll see you
well,
on
that
Plus.
Okay. Amber, that was. I feel very inspired.
I know.
Not that I don't feel inspired on our show on a regular basis, but yeah, I feel like I'm not going to talk down about Google Plus because I'm clearly just not leveraging it as much as I should be. And I know I just used the word leverage, but in this case, I think it's actually appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sarah is a perfect example of someone who's gone really deep with the different tools that Google offers and just a perfect use case scenario of how all of these tools work really well. So it's great to have her on because I don't think we've had anyone who really specializes in the Google platform on the show. I mean, we've had people who are maybe experts on Twitter and Facebook
sure.
and other tools.
Yeah.
But it's nice to get her perspective. And I mean, you can just feel it. You know, she lives and breathes this day in and day out. So really fun to have her on. And I should mention that next week, Sarah, we do have Mark Cuban confirmed to come on and talk about his app, Cyber Dust. So that will be fun as well.
I am so excited. I'm going to brush up on my basketball trivia. No, I'm just kidding. We'll probably not talk too much about basketball with Mark. But yes, no, that's great. We're gonna put a little bit more emphasis on guests because I think... you know, Amber and I, as do all of you, learn from the more people who are not only passionate about this space, but doing things that maybe we're not doing. Sarah Hill is such a perfect example of that. And I'm starting to think, because not just Google Plus, but there will be folks who will be very invested on Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus or, you know, their Instagram community. And it really is, as Sarah mentioned, followers does not equate... engagement and value necessarily, but they can, and it depends on the community that you create for yourself. And clearly Google Plus is working really well for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. So it's, you know, just something to keep in mind, especially when people are trying to decide, well, there's so many hours in the day, where do I want to spend the bulk of my time?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that she kind of hit the nail on the head with that human element, right? I mean, this is as close to face-to-face conversations as you can get in terms of what she's doing with Hangouts, and I think it's definitely interesting to watch some of those things really evolve, so fun to have her on for sure.
Absolutely. All right, well, before we get into some of the rest of our show, there's a lot left. Let's take a moment to thank 99designs for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. 99designs connects all types of people. Could be you, could be me, anybody who's looking for a graphic design that's great, that's professional, that looks good, it's something that they couldn't achieve on their own. 99 Designs is a community, a global one. Over 280,000 designers are part of it. So you might need a new logo or a business card, or you want to make some company t-shirts and nobody at the company really has some great idea or the skills
to put together some graphic design. Anything that is design-based is what 99designs is all about. Maybe you need fresh marketing collateral. 99designs offers a lot of different kinds of marketing design. You can get an affordable email template or a banner ad or an infographic, all sorts of stuff. You can really get creative with this. And you can start your next graphic design project for as low as $199, which is an incredible deal. If you go to 99designs.com/social hour, you get even better of a deal because you'll get a $99 power pack of services completely free. Zero extra. You get a power pack of services. What's a power pack, you ask? Well, gives you more designer time and attention because what happens is your request, your design gets featured in their design marketplace, and then you get nearly twice as many designs. So instead of, oh, I don't know, a dozen designers saying, hey, let's submit some designs for you, then you choose your favorite one, and that's the one you pay for, you get twice as many of those. So the odds that you'll have the perfect design are much, much greater. In fact, you're probably going to like a lot more of them. But again, you choose the one that you like the best, and that's how 99designs works, and it works really well for you. So 99designs.com/social hour is the URL to go to, and we thank the team at 99designs for sponsoring our show. All right, Amber, Facebook last week, no, I guess it was earlier this week. I wasn't here at Twit yesterday, so I feel like I've had a weekend and I really haven't. Facebook is developing a deeper photo facial recognition engine. And they're calling it something that I just think is the worst name in the world.
Yes.
Deep face. It just sounds like dirty or something.
Kind of do a double take with this one, right?
A little bit.
It's called DeepFace, and it's software that they're working on. This is based on a Mashable article. They're saying that the accuracy of the method is 97.25%, which is just under the 97.5% accuracy that a human can identify. So they're getting as close as possible to the same amount of identification that a human would have, but in the software format. So I don't know. You know, I read this. It looks like they'll be rolling this out and presenting it at a conference that's coming up in June. And I was thinking, well, what's kind of the use for this? And how would they want to be able to use this within the Facebook environment? Obviously, it has to do with tagging photos and identifying people. And the more I think about it, the more I absolutely hate it. Not only the name, but the fact that, to me, that I don't know how much value this presents except for Facebook themselves.
Yeah, that's my thing. You know, we've got people in the chat room saying, yes, it's a horrible name. Glenn in chat says it sounds like a face wash. That probably would have been better as Deep Face from, you know, Noxzema or something. It just, it sounds creepy to me. But that aside, it's sort of like, how often are you tagged in maybe a photo that's, there's a big enough group that maybe you don't get tagged by the person who is adding it to Facebook manually and say, oh, thank goodness Facebook has that photo recognition feature so that I know I'm in this photo. I mean, it's happened to me once or twice, but I don't feel like it's something that I'm benefiting from that often, and I don't really know who is.
This is the thing. I mean, does anyone care? I mean, I don't even like being tagged in photos. Half the time, the photos are terrible photos. And I just think that, you know, it feels like a little bit like an invasion of my privacy, even if I was in a public place or among friends. It doesn't add to the Facebook experience for me. And I think this is just another example, unfortunately, of Facebook doing something that doesn't benefit the end user, but instead potentially does benefit themselves, maybe even advertisers. And more, it's about them in some ways just coming into our personal space a little bit too much. So not a huge fan of this. Would love to know what people who are watching or listening think. Maybe we're missing something here, but it doesn't feel like it. It's just it's a bad name and maybe even just a bad idea.
Yeah, I guess there's some value from having technology that is really, really good at face recognition. You know, maybe you're in a shadow, or there's a, you know, some tree leaves in front of you, or whatever, or just bad lighting, or that sort of thing. Or again, there's so many people and you're sort of way in the back of a big group photo. So there is value there. But when it comes to Facebook, yeah, in general, I don't feel like it's a value for the user base. And Amber, I'm with you.
One of the things that gives me the greatest stress and concern is when I get the email notification, so-and-so has tagged you in a photo on Facebook, which I allow my friends to do. I know I could set it up to say, I want to review everything before I'm tagged. But I feel like, well, you know, if it's my friends, I was with them, and they won't post some bad picture of me. People have really different ideas of what a good picture is. And there are a lot of photos of me where I'm just like, untag. I'm sorry. That is just bad. I just don't want to be, I don't want this to represent me at all.
Yeah. You know, I shouldn't reveal this, but I had a party at my house a few years ago in the call for help days, I believe. And there were two police officers who had shown up, and they were friends of mine, and they were just joking around with another friend of mine, and they actually put handcuffs on her, and someone took a picture, and that individual uploaded that picture to Facebook. And of course, my friend who was in the handcuffs, she's thinking, okay, this is totally out of context. It doesn't make any sense. It was just a fun little joke. And all of a sudden she's there on Facebook. Everybody knows who she is. So there are plenty of examples of how this can go terribly wrong. So not a huge fan.
Well, speaking of going terribly wrong, how about something that's a little bit different than social? Amber, you found, or it was actually suggested to us on Twitter by Mac Interactive, an app called Cloak. I've not heard of it. What does it do?
This is an antisocial app, and I think we've had a few of these that we've sort of touched on the show. What this does is that it takes public information data from networks like Foursquare and Instagram so that you would know if there are people who you know who are nearby, and then you can run the other way. I mean, essentially, that's what they're trying to do, is to allow you to stay away from the people you know if you aren't all that social. And that's pretty much it. That's the gist of the app. But I think, as the article says on the BBC site, Sarah, this does really stay in tune with some of the different apps we've talked about recently that are like Whisper and Secret, you know, the idea that things are becoming more antisocial in the social world.
Incognito mode for real life. That is their tagline. That is so good. It's kind of true. So let's use Foursquare as an example, just because that's the location-based service that most people know. You understand how it works. There are definitely people that I am Foursquare friends with, and for weird reasons, I feel uncomfortable unfriending them. I can't even think of anybody right now, not that I would name names, obviously, but it does sort of work. It can work both ways. I can say, oh, cool, Amber's at the coffee shop. I'd love to go see her. But if it's so-and-so, this person that I'm not crazy about or is too forward or assertive at the coffee shop, now I might not want to go there. I might go to the other coffee shop. But Cloak is only for people that you don't want to see, which is so funny because you'd still be following them, but for the absolute opposite reasons.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's good for some people who maybe want to shy away from running into people in real life. They're not into the human side of social media. So it's interesting. I think we're seeing more and more of these tools, and it's just almost like a backlash to how personal and social things have become online. And there are people who want maybe to escape it a little bit. So definitely fun to watch some of those trends. And Sarah, for our social tip of the week, I know a few weeks ago I had mentioned that Pinterest sends out a newsletter to business owners who want to learn how to do a better job of pinning. And I subscribe to the newsletter. It's really, really great. And I thought I would share some of the tips that they had this week, because I think they're really simple and really effective. And the article is just three ways to improve your pins on Pinterest. So we haven't talked about Pinterest for a while, and I know you're a fan. So a couple of tips include vertical pins work better. So if you are taking images, you want to have those images organized vertically, stacked on top of one another. That's just the way that Pinterest will work better in the long run for you. Longer descriptions outperform shorter ones. I think that's kind of obvious, but I probably wouldn't have thought. I would have thought people don't want to read a lot. And positive aspirational messages resonate. Again, I think that's pretty obvious, but just some added tips for people who want to be more effective on Pinterest, particularly if you're using it to build your own personal brand or maybe a brand you work for.
Yeah, I think the Pinterest and many other networks, but Pinterest specifically, benefits from people saying, it's so fun when I'm on Pinterest, I'm learning how to do all this new stuff. And in general, Amber's boards are always positive. I feel good about it. She's teaching me how to get better on Google Plus or make a certain dish, or inspire me to, decorate my nursery, but that wouldn't be me, but somebody. That's just, you know, I don't know. I have a friend doing that right now.
Right.
It's just no rumors, please. It's not about me. But yeah, I think that some of that stuff does seem kind of obvious, but it's a good reminder, especially when you're looking to build a brand. Pinterest is a great place to do that, but there is kind of a style that you there are good guidelines that people can follow and get better engagement.
Yeah, and one of the things I find just about my own Pinterest account is that it can get messy pretty quickly on Pinterest, right? I mean, it almost reminds me, it definitely doesn't remind me of MySpace, but you know how MySpace could go the wrong way, go sideways pretty quickly as far as the design of your account and page? Pinterest feels a little bit like that. You can have a really ugly Pinterest page because you're just not being effective with the type of images you're pinning and the way that you're posting. So before you go down that road and get into that territory, it's a good idea to kind of clean it up and make it look better. Oh yeah, this is my Pinterest page. So we'll see what this looks like.
There you go.
It's okay.
I think it looks very nice. Mine is, I don't know. I'm such a Pinterest lurker. Use it just to, it's like I'm just browsing a, you know, fashion magazine half the time that I'm on Pinterest, but I still get a lot of joy out of it. But again, there are certain pages that work better for me, certain boards, I should call them, not pages. And yeah, it applies to all of us, no matter what you're doing. All right, Amber, for our spotlight of the week, this is actually, this is a great little site. It's called interviewly.com, so interviewly.com. And the point of it is to make a little bit more sense of Reddit AMAs, which are the Ask Me Anythings that are very popular on Reddit. Celebrities, thought leaders, scientists, sports stars, AMAs are a big part of the Reddit culture. The only thing about Reddit is it can be a little difficult to follow the conversation if you're actually looking at it in Reddit form, because it's text-based, the things get threaded, questions get asked, and there's an upvote, downvote process on Reddit for anybody who's familiar with how Reddit works. And so you kind of get what looks like sometimes a long, convoluted email thread, which can be consumed but sometimes feels really unorganized. Interviewly basically takes these Reddit AMAs that have already happened, that already exist, and all the information's already there, and puts them into a format that is more readable, more visual, gives you a little bit more of like a overview as to, okay, we're looking at Bill Murray's, let's ask him some questions, and then you've got his answers to these specific questions, almost as if it's more of a linear interview, which is a great idea. And I don't know, I've had a good time, especially because some of these AMAs I haven't read anyway. Like the Bill Murray AMA, I haven't even read. Some of the celebrity interviews I have read before, but it's still fun to go back and look through all of them. And again, there are a lot of different kinds of people who are featured on AMAs. Anybody can do one. I mean, I did one. But the people that, you know, might be heroes or mentors or, you know, someone to look up to, it's kind of fun to read them this way.
It's so cool. I just literally jumped into it right now, Sarah, as you were talking about it, and I found an AMA from Bill Nye, the Science Guy. And one of the questions is, do you and Neil deGrasse Tyson hang out regularly? If so, what do you talk about? And the answer from Bill Nye is astrophysics, the business of television, baseball, wine, and women. It's just kind of fun, like you said, to dive into it in a much more attractive format and just easier to read overall.
It is. And it's great. And the nice thing about AMAs is, and sometimes they go horribly wrong. Woody Harrelson is a great example of an AMA that it just didn't work. He didn't really understand the way that the medium is supposed to be approached. But for the most part, you end up learning a lot of really cool things about people because you're getting questions that are sometimes very relevant and sometimes very left field. The Reddit community likes to kind of throw those curveballs in general. And when somebody wants to be forthcoming and also a good sport, you end up getting all of these answers about people that there's just really refreshing. I remember Molly Ringwald did an AMA. She's, for anybody who's a little too young, she was a very, very popular actress in the 80s, some of my very favorite movies from childhood. And she did one recently, and she was like super hip as far as the internet culture goes and kind of the online life, and I remember thinking, that is the coolest, because that's just the last thing I would ever know about somebody.
Yeah, no, there's a few. There's one in particular recently I remember. I can't remember who it was, but it was a very candid conversation. I think that's what you get out of some of these AMAs, is just how authentic people are and how casual they become just because of the nature of the platform. I mean, they're probably used to having a camera stuck in their face, and all of a sudden they're just simply able to share and write, and it's probably a nice way to be able to have conversations for them. So that's a really cool site, though. I did not see that before, so thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I
know.
It,
Sarah, already. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Woo. I don't remember where I found it either. So I can't say I can take much credit, because I certainly didn't make this, but I'm happy to pass it along. All right, moving on. What is our social marketing spotlight of the week, Amber?
Well, I think we've talked about how some marketers are using Vine, and we've talked definitely in the past about certain Vine celebrities, people that really aren't known anywhere else on the internet, but they do have a large following on Vine. So I thought this was an interesting article from Advertising Age, where they were mentioning that Vine comedians are emerging as the latest hot property for brands. So they were mentioning that a lot of comedians, or people who want to be comedians, aspiring comedians, are going to Vine. There's one video here of this guy, I believe he's from France, perhaps, and he's having a conversation with a little squirrel, and how they're building up their reputation as comedians through these tiny little micro videos, and brands are jumping on to try to work with them to create their own content. So it's very niche, and I think this speaks to the reason, Sarah, that we want to have more guests on the show, because we cannot possibly be experts in all these different platforms of people who are diving this deep into these different worlds.
There are a few folks that I follow on Vine that are funny, that's exactly what I want out of it. And there's something about the looping quality of Vine, even though I have not made a Vine in ages, and quite frankly, I really don't care to. I've got other things to do. I do like to watch some of this comedy unfold, and there is something about comedy specifically in a short format that if you can convey something that makes people laugh on the other side. That's hard to do, because you don't have much time and your resources are limited. And I think that brands are smart to take advantage of these people that, in many cases, and that's just sort of like the YouTube generation in general, are extremely talented and maybe just don't have some sort of a traditional venue in order to get known. And you can kind of scoop them up and make them your ambassador.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this before in the context that Gary Vee had partnered with someone, and they have their own Vine talent agency, believe it or not. And it is just to discover people who are big Vine stars. You know, we've gone well beyond the YouTube world into these different platforms, and there are stars making a name for themselves all over the place. So it's kind of fun to be able to watch that evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know... I mean... It's funny. It's like that just goes to show you how quickly these social networks explode with popularity. Is there can be a talent agency just for Vine?
Who knew,
mean,
sir?
that's not even taken into consideration the people that might be putting videos on Instagram, let's say, or recording videos that get shared on Twitter or anywhere else. Just Vine specifically. So that who would have thought? Who would have thought a year ago we'd be talking about that, sort of like casting agencies going to the Vine management group and saying, who's our funniest person, because Huggies needs a new spokesperson.
It's random,
what is it
right?
with me and babies today? Huggies,
Sarah,
nurseries.
Stop. As your friend, I'm trying to protect you. You have to stop.
That's enough. I'm gonna pull the ripcord. All right, let's move on to
the cord, Sarah. Oh,
okay. All right. Okay. Let's. I'm just gonna shut up for a minute. Amber, tell us about the gig of the week, which is a new feature that we're doing on the show now, where we try to get all of you jobs, or at least knowing about the kinds of jobs that are in the social space.
Yeah. So not only can we keep you up to date on all the latest social media trends, but we can also help you find work. And this is a neat job. As a disclaimer, I do write, I blog, and do videos for Fast Company on a regular basis. They did not ask me to mention this posting, but I thought it would be pretty cool for our gig of the week. They're looking for an editor for co.design, which is a section of their website. And this particular person has to plan and edit the daily news feed, generate story ideas, and handle some of the programming and newsletters, and more specifically, help to populate social media channels. So they want someone with experience as an online editor who also has experience in the social media space. And they say that the salary is competitive. It's a contract position. I know for a fact they're an awesome company to work with. I've worked with them for 2.5 years. And if there's anyone out there who's an online editor, passionate about social media, who watches or listens to the show, I would definitely apply quickly, because I think they're going to get a lot of applications for this gig. And like I said, a great place to work.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Fast Company editor, you know the people. I know a few people who work over at Fast Company. Seems like a great group of folks. And yes, for anybody, especially you wordsmiths out there. And this is kind of a funny category that we have, Amber, because as you said, act quickly, because of course good jobs are hard to find, and you got to sort of hit the pavement and be on top of it. But people might be watching the show at any point, because we're shooting it live. But for those of you who don't join us live, you're watching whenever you have time and inclination to do so. But that might give you a little bit more incentive to watch us live if you ever can. We are recording the show on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That's when Amber and I actually sit down and do the show. And you're welcome always to watch us live and watch us make the show. But if you can't, you can always go to twit.tv/TSH. That is where all of our show archives live, all of our videos. That's us from a couple weeks ago, I think.
Oh, yeah.
All of the videos are there, too. You can watch them right on the page. You can subscribe to the show. That allows you to download either an audio or a video version of the show as new episodes are published to our platform without actually having to think about it. And then any links that we talk about, whether it's cool sites that we found or apps, or information about the guests that we have on the show and where to find out more about them. Those are all part of our online library at twit.tv/TSH. And of course, we love hearing from all of you, because we love your feedback and your ideas and your tips. The Social Hour at twit.tv is how you write us. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, maybe you're just better over audio, you can leave a message for us at 2626-SOCIAL. 2626, S-O-C-I-A-L. You could record a video. You can tweet at Amber and I throughout the week. We're always collecting your ideas, and we try to address your questions as well.
And I think that people probably know by now some of our sections that we do. So if you have something specific to a certain section,
totally.
Like this week, our app, that came from someone on Twitter. And if you have a gig of the week or anything else that you want to add, or rad or fad, just let us know, because we're always looking for good stuff.
Absolutely. All right. Well, as we begin to wind down this hour of the Social Hour, we wouldn't do so without a rad or fad. That's the way that Amber kicks us into the long weekend that we might be having. I don't know, Amber. It's just I'm just trying not to sneeze right now. What's our rad or fad this week?
It's all good. Okay, so I found this from Dana Brunetti, who is a friend of Twit. He's been on the Social Hour in the past. Sarah, you would remember him as one of the producers behind the Facebook movie that came out, The Social Network,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing a lot of cool stuff now. So he had posted about Coin on his Facebook page and said that he bought two Coin gadgets. And I was like, oh, this looks interesting. I know he's super tech savvy. So I was diving into it, and I'm going to try to explain it. Essentially, what Coin is it's a replacement for carrying around all of the credit cards or loyalty cards that you have in your wallet. It is one plastic-like card, and you basically program it. So you would take a picture of your credit cards or debit cards. You would program it so they had different profiles within this plastic-like credit card sized card. And then you would be able to use up to 8 different cards simply with this one card to buy stuff, if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me, Amber, and I should say, I really wanted you to explain it, but I am actually a Coin backer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so this the first time I heard about this was last year, and yeah, we're actually watching a really good demonstrational video that was put together from the team there, and you know, at that time, it was just really a conceptual idea. They didn't have a prototype to show anybody. But I thought, well, as somebody who, I mean, I actually lost my, well, I didn't lose my wallet recently, but I, if you must know, I dropped my wallet in a toilet and it was tragically lost forever. So what I've been doing since then is literally carrying around a bunch of cards that I might need in my various purses, and I'm always leaving things, I'm forgetting where, and then I've got my gym card and I don't have what they, and it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. So the idea of this, and again, I don't have a coin card yet. Nobody does. But it was $50 to be a backer. And the idea of it, if it works correctly, is worth the money to me for sure. Because I want to carry less things. I want to have a nice smaller wallet with me. And I like the idea of consolidating my cards. Of course, there are some concerns where people say, well, I mean, is it completely secure? If somebody mm-hmm. takes your coin card, then do they have access to, you know, five of your credit cards rather than just one if they were to take those? And I'm not exactly sure how some of that is going to be addressed, but the concept is great.
I'm with you. I think it's amazing. I mean, I just recently this year, I got a little smartphone case that has placements in it for your credit cards. And I have so many cards, probably, you know, five or six, maybe seven, that I carry around on a regular basis that I actually ended up ripping the case. And I lost a card recently that just fell out. I mean, it's like we have so much technology to do so many amazing things, Sarah. And yet when it comes to actually having a wallet that will fit your phone and not having to carry a lot around, we still haven't figured it out. So I love this. When I saw this, I thought this is awesome. I think the price point is about $100 now. I think you could get it early on for $50.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a really cool solution. And if it works well and works everywhere, I think it could replace a lot of the pain that people have with carrying so many cards on them at once.
Yeah, it looks like you can still pre-order for $55 if you're interested in doing so. We've got, you know, some people on both sides of the board, at least in chat. Some people are saying, this is just never going to ship. Other people saying, this just seems like some sort of a, you know, kind of a nightmare because your information will be on some of their servers somewhere. And as we know, many secure servers end up not being so secure and companies are getting hacked all the time. And yeah, there are things to address, but conceptually, I think it's pretty rad.
Yeah, I think it is definitely pretty rad. And I think, you know, maybe this is just the first iteration, right, Sarah? I mean, it could improve over time and could get even better. I know it seems like it's just early days, but I think it's rad. And anything to help me not have to carry around a large bag or a wallet that breaks, I am totally for. So it would be a big fat rad this week. We had a rad last week as well. And who knows next week, Sarah?
Who knows? Big fat rad 2 weeks in a row. You never know. All right, well, Amber, we have come to the end of our hour. Thanks to everybody for watching, for listening, for downloading the show, for being with us on your commute, for telling a friend that Sarah and Amber are pretty cool and you should listen to us, or, you know, be part of the conversation with us. Remember, we are live Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. I'll be in Petaluma next week when I see you again. Amber, will you still be in Florida?
I will. I'm actually going to Vegas for a couple of days on Monday to speak at a conference, but then I come back here and I'll be doing the show from here again next Thursday. And I would encourage anyone, if you get a chance to download the CyberDust app from Mark Cuban and his team, please do. And if you have questions around the app, if you could send us a video asking that question or an email, we'd love to share it and ask those questions when he joins us next week. So tell your friends, let them know Mark Cuban's coming on next Thursday. Try out the CyberDust app and we should have a great conversation around that.
Yeah, I can't wait. I am really excited. I always like his interviews, but I've never had the pleasure of interviewing him, so that's going to be a real treat.
It's going to be awesome.
All right, until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.
Goodbye, everyone.